Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Cat lovers and feline friends, it's time for Adele Park's Quirky Catnips.
Today on Quirky Catnips, we're airing a chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park. This frightfully funny tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Find out what happens when Skitters goes cattywampus for a kitten named Harriet. Tune in each week to hear a new chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat, only on Pet Life Radio. Meow, kitties!
Audio Recording St. George presents Quirky Cat Goes Splat. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park. Narrated by a full cast.
Splat!
Meow, bitches.
Twisted Tales by Skitters the Cat. Part 17.
People who say there are only seven wonders of the world haven't been to Naval, Utah. There are some energy hotspots around here which defy explanation. My former home at Legacy Grove is one such place. The wild navals of Legacy Grove saved the lives of the polygamists who settled this area in 1857. The orchard appears to be untouched by time, but one bite of the fruit today usually results in an unsightly tango with the toilet. The oasis is also cabalistic. It seems to shift places in the desert, making it difficult to locate even for a cat with a good sense of direction. The oasis has become one of my favorite haunts, primarily due to the high-octane catnip sprouting up throughout the lush vegetation. Nothing Nancy Neptune has ever given me compares to the creepy, mind-altering buzz of oasis catnip. Moon McKenna, the mother of my twins, has become a modern-day alchemist of sorts, harnessing the mystical ingredients indigenous to this area. Extract from the toxic orange trees at Legacy Grove have proven to be an odor-fighting ingredient that no decomposing corpse could ever overcome. Moon is continually experimenting with plants plucked from the desert hills as well. A few weeks ago, she had the nerve to leave me behind on a trip to the nearby coral sand drifts where she harvested a basket of creosote. I know better than to carve my initials into the woodwork at Gecko's Gulch, but I'm not above pooping on someone's test run for a new skincare product. Unfortunately, I picked the wrong place to pull a dirty squirty. The petri dish with the mounds of creamy white goo actually looked inviting. It only took a few minutes to realize I'd served up the wrong poo-poo platter. The hair on my tiny hiney dissolved like sugar in water and fell off in lumpy, striped chunks. My response was to take a nap and hope when I woke up all would be well again. Instead, I was roused by the smell of an excrement-embellished petri dish being waved under my nose by an amused Moon McKenna. How was I supposed to know she was working on a hair removal product? This fuzz-free bud incident got me wondering if the drapes match the curtains on Harriet.
Chapter 17. Moon McKenna.
My serene California morning was rudely interrupted by the buzz of a cell phone. No one in their right mind would disturb me on vacation unless it was a DEFCON 1 catastrophe. Criminy, the kids at Gecko's Gulch had nearly blown what was already a tenuous rescue effort. Rather than an orderly departure from Zion Flats, Arinda hightailed it out, Evangeline and some scruffy kitten in tow. When Meredith Andrews agreed to help, I doubt she knew about the cat. Welcome to my world. Miraculously, Arinda's rambling wreck of a van made it all the way to my mother-in-law's home near Los Angeles. Arinda pulled into the sprawling ranch right before supper, her oil-dripping, exhaust-polluting, gas-guzzling, air-conditionless van befouling the otherwise immaculate driveway. Arinda had plenty to say about the traffic in Nevada and California. Normally, Arinda hoards her words the way a survivor from the Great Depression saves butter tubs. Arinda didn't think anyone had followed her, although they definitely knew she was gone. The prophet, Nephi, paid a not-so-neighborly visit to my sister earlier in the day. Just in case there was trouble here, I had sent the twins to spend the night with their cousins. Marta, my mother-in-law, insisted on staying, even though she's got her own problems. Earlier this week, bad news arrived from Marta's doctor. After nearly a year of grueling chemo and radiation treatments, Marta's cancer had metastasized. An emergency meeting was being held at the oncology center in the morning. The topic, Marta's end-of-life care. Despite all of this, or maybe because of it, Marta spent most of the afternoon preparing food for our guest from Zion Flats. Having gone all day without eating, Orinda didn't protest when a second helping was heaped on her plate by my mother-in-law. Marta had whipped up her famous Mexican pie, a delicious pastry filled with refried beans, spicy meat, and generous amounts of cheese. Dessert was glazed cherry fritters. The food was superb, but in sum, it amounted to one hell of a lot of fiber being pumped into the plumbing all at once. Dinner left everyone sleepy, but Marta was the only one we put to bed. My husband and I had a full night's work ahead of us, one that had to be done while Randall was trying to process the crushing new reality about his mother's health, or lack thereof. He seemed glad for the temporary distraction. We turned our attention to mainstreaming Orinda's appearance, just in case the bride barbarians from Zion Flats came looking for their sister snitch. Performing a reverse Yeti on a bewhiskered polygamist woman proved to be exciting. One of the new products I've been developing at Good Karma is an organic hair removal cream. Depilatories have been around forever, but most women don't like them because they smell like a lethal combination of pickled eggs and body odor. I've been able to overcome this problem by using a concentrated extract made from the oranges at Legacy Grove. This fruit isn't suitable for eating, but the extract is a wonderful agent I use in a number of products. Orinda showed up at just the right time to test my new depilatory on a grand scale. Working on Orinda felt like an archaeological dig, only I was sopping up dissolved hair instead of sifting through earth. Who knew what was to be uncovered? Turns out, not the swamp monster I had imagined. The thick layer of facial hair had protected Orinda's skin from the hazards of the desert sun, leaving her with a relatively youthful appearance once it was all removed. I put a large jar of the cream in the suitcase I had hastily assembled for Orinda. Randall's turn was next. Long hair is part of the polygamous culture for women. When Nephi wants to torture someone, he pulls their hair out by the roots. The first thing Isla Ray did when she escaped was to lob off her ponytail. To this day, Isla Ray keeps her hair shorter than Brandon's. Her do reminds me of Billy Idol. Orinda, on the other hand, was a little more reticent. There was a lot of back and forth until Randall settled the matter by offering to do a perm. This way, Orinda could keep most of the length, but still radically change her look. Exhausted from the long drive, Orinda caved in and let Randall have his way. She also let him have the after effects from Marta's Mexican fiesta. The first time Orinda eked out some bean-laden tear gas, everyone pretended not to notice, even though the fumes were so noxious you could almost see them. Then she expelled a fast-moving drumroll of farts that built to such a hilarious crescendo, I couldn't help but giggle. Randall, normally a private tutor, chimed in with his own toxic release, performing what could only be called flatulence in B-flat. At first, Orinda looked mortified. Then she pinched off another one, and we all burst out laughing. The next few hours were a back-end blowout. Between ripping off air biscuits and chortling hysterically over all the rectal turbulence, Randall managed to roll Orinda's long hair into a spiral perm. The timing of Orinda's big Zion Flats prison break wasn't good. We were scheduled to go to Fairyland the next day, a punishment levied against me by my brother-in-law's ex-wife, Colette Spinkle. Unlike me, Randall had been looking forward to taking our twins on their first ever trip to the Enchanted Isle of long lines, nauseating rides, and overpriced lemonade. Fairyland is the stuff of which all gay men are made. Randall nearly sobbed when Marta's doctor scheduled her appointment for that same day. I wasn't about to take 2 6-year-olds and Blue's stepdaughter to a major theme park with Colette Spinkle as the only other adult chaperone. Orinda, pleased with her new fur-free face and curly hair, was surprisingly accommodating. Knowing Orinda couldn't stay under the radar in her ugly polygamist attire, I had bought some modest, full-length mom skirts while she was en route to California. I was flabbergasted when Orinda chose instead to wear a purple velour tracksuit Isla Ray had given her when they met up at the social services office in Las Vegas. She looked like an elongated grape. Unaware that Orinda didn't like children, the twins kept petting the sleeves of her outfit. Then the girls did something that made me the proudest mother this side of the Mississippi. They got into a nasty brawl over who got to sit with Orinda on the rides. The matter was settled by the twins agreeing to take turns. Even Lexi, Blue's stepdaughter, wanted her fair share of Orinda time. Orinda seemed befuddled by all the attention. Fairyland was a lot more fun than I expected. In fact, everyone had a blast except Colette. She spent the whole trip whining about the weather, crowded conditions, and stomach-churning rides. Orinda, by contrast, seemed like she was having the time of her life, especially when the girls decided everyone should get fairy wings. Orinda chose a pair that matched her purple People Eaters tracksuit.
Hang tight, kiddies. We'll be back in a scratch.
What happens when cosmetics and polygamy collide? Find out in Quirky Killers by Adele Park. Take a trip to quirky polygamist country, where one of the local brides is just itching to get her husbands to heaven in a hurry. Quirky Killers, get it today on audible.com. You'll die laughing.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We now return to more of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park on Pet Life Radio. Against my orders, the twins awoke Marta when we got back to the ranch. They had picked out a set of magenta fairy wings bedazzled in sparkly glitter and rhinestones. Climbing into bed with her, the twins insisted Marta try them on. Although I was steamed the girls had awakened their grandmother on a day when she had such difficult news to digest, I could see Marta was delighted by the gift. I took a picture of the three of them together in bed, deciding it was the last time I would photograph Marta. Randall's mother looked radiant in her magenta wings. I wanted this image to last forever. In the morning, Orinda left for Oregon. Randall's mother had traded a ranch truck for Orinda's beat-up van. It wasn't much to look at, but it was reliable and had under 50,000 miles. I was disappointed Orinda didn't stay another day. I noticed Orinda had placed her purple fairy wings on the passenger seat where she could see them. Watching her drive off, I shed a few uncharacteristic tears, warmed by the knowledge that Arinda had earned her wings and was now free to fly. Meanwhile, the mood at my mother-in-law's house was anything but enchanting. The twins were waking up to the news that Marta's days were numbered. My own mother had died when I was 18. I never got the chance to say goodbye. I wasn't about to live with a wall of regret this time around. In the sitcoms, mother-in-laws are often portrayed as hideous bitches who jealously guard their sons from the women they think aren't good enough for their offspring. I've never experienced anything like this with Marta. She has always been an angel in magenta fairy wings. I felt like I was being made motherless all over again. How could I possibly say goodbye to the woman who cut snowflakes and valentines with my children? The mother who was at my side when my twins were born? The person who spent her free time working as a volunteer teaching English as a second language to migrant workers? It was so fucking unfair. The idea of losing Marta cranked my anxiety to unbearable levels. Last year, we paid a sad goodbye to Randall's father. My husband has always been a bit high-strung, but he's inexplicably calm during a genuine crisis. I was counting on Randall's support to get me through the loss of his mother. Randall and I decided to spend the remainder of the summer in California. I made a plan to get things moving along at Good Karma, my skincare company. My dearest friend, Nadine Reinhardt McElprang Stratton Villapando Davenport Milner, agreed to return to Gecko's Gulch to run the lab until school starts in the fall. Nadine was my business manager for years until she got run out of Naval for offing one of her numerous husbands. The town fathers thought Nadine was dredging up negative publicity by administering end-of-life belladonna blowouts to those already diddling on the edge of death. Never mind the fact that the Masonic Order of Moroni in Naval does the very same thing. The difference is, their kill orders are carried out in secret. I wouldn't admit this to Randall, but having Nadine at the ready is twofold. Not only will she help keep the lab running at Good Karma, but I'm secretly hoping she can pitch in if things get ugly with Marta. My sweet mother-in-law is now on hospice. The countdown clock is ticking so loud it practically keeps me awake at night. Hospice, in general, is staffed with the most loving people on earth. I got to know many of them during the time when Randall's father was ramping down. My problem is this whole business with the drugs. By the time hospice shows up, everyone agrees the end is near. What people don't know is how goddamn long it will take. Oftentimes, patients are strung out on morphine for days on end. Since hospice is administering near lethal doses of drugs, why not save time and get it over with already? I'll tell you why. Because this is big business. The longer a patient is kept alive, the more the fat cats at the top get to line their pockets. Watching Randall's father die is something I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. If I have a say in this matter, I'm not going to let them do the same thing to Marta. Nadine's willingness to rocket terminal patients into the cosmos is my ace in the hole. Nadine began her killing career by snuffing out her second husband. He was a polygamist named Laryl Stratton. During that marriage, Nadine formed a fragile relationship with Nephi, the prophet of Zion Flats. Convincing the old codger that tax-free cash would come in handy, Nadine hired some of the women from Zion Flats to work at Good Karma. Pretending to be shocked that Arinda and Evangeline were missing, Nadine suggested Nephi phone the police, which of course he would never do. I was off the hook for the whole mess. After all, how could I have staged an escape when I wasn't even in Utah? Nephi likely had his suspicions, but I knew from other oopsies he wasn't about to walk away from the money his spousal servants brought in. My workers at Good Karma were going to need the extra income. Unbeknownst to Nephi, the feds are getting ready to clamp down on all the welfare fraud happening in Zion Flats. Even if this wasn't the case, my sometimes lover, Meredith Andrews, was through making ransom payments for marital hostages. She kicked in some money for the free Orinda Fund, as we all had, but this was vastly different from the two previous situations, which required Meredith to write large checks to first emancipate Laryl Stratton and later Isla Rae Stratton. The state of Utah ignores the plight of polygamists the way I ignore those annoying updates I get on my computer. The authorities are seemingly fine with all the gibbery pokery that goes on between old men and teenage girls in Zion Flats. The one thing that speaks to these people, however, is money. And they're losing a lot of it when it comes to the folks living in that dumpster fire known as Zion Flats. Wide-scale welfare fraud is how the polygamists roll in my corner of Utah. The state is aware its resources are being drained in the wrong direction, but they've been unable to form a case to stop it. Just as one filthy hand washes the other, it's hard to get anyone from Zion Flats to fess up to anything, even when they get busted. Then Nicholas DeLuca was picked up on some unrelated charges and decided to squeal on Nephi in exchange for a lighter prison sentence. As part of the deal, Nicholas agreed to sign over custody of his daughter, Evangeline, to Meredith Andrews. In reality, Meredith and Isla Rae are likely the only people on Earth who want to take on a slippery kid like that. Hopefully, Evangeline will level out once she isn't worried about being poisoned, abused, or taken on late-night witchcraft outings. I don't have all the details about what happened when Taj found Evangeline floating in the baptism pool at Juniper Hollow. I'm sure it must have scared the hell out of him, which is good. I feel fairly certain neither one of these boys will repeat the mistake of trespassing on mob property again. Just to make sure, I had a rather stern chat with my little friend. I could tell Taj was genuinely sorry because he repeatedly apologized for putting Evangeline and Orinda in danger. Now that I'm planning to spend the remainder of the summer in California, I'm glad the task of helping those two escape was put on a fast track. Taj nervously wondered if I would ask him to leave Gecko's Gulch. Of course not. I would never do that to my sister Blue. Having Taj around makes Brandon more manageable for everyone. I know. Brandon had been at Gecko's Gulch a few times without his sidekick. I don't tolerate "I'm bored" talk from my twins, but there's little I can do about other people's kids. Blue is new to this whole parenting thing, leaving her vulnerable to teenage tantrums. Surprisingly, Brandon actually did the right thing when it came to the calamity at Juniper Hollow. Our talk following Brandon's deadly flower debacle must have stuck with him. Brandon was quick to alert Blue when Taj went to Juniper Hollow and turned the christening font into his own private jacuzzi. After I finished scaring the crap out of Taj, I sent a text to Brandon that said, "Thanks for following the rules. You get to live for another day." I was trying to be funny while reminding Brandon, and now Taj, I'm not fucking around. Taj is currently unaware that his mother, Dana, was able to get the guy after all. The wife of the man Dana was carrying on with found out about the affair and filed for divorce. His relationship with Dana was back on, a clear sign to me that men simply can't go unlaid. They insist on having a booty babe on speed dial at all times. The boys are going to Rectal Fest in New York at the end of the summer. Taj will head out a few days early to spend some time with Dana. She's set to be released from rehab and plans to move in with her soon-to-be divorced boyfriend. Naturally, Dana is worried about how to break this news to Taj. I'm careful not to pass judgment, knowing it's far worse to stay in a loveless relationship than it is to rip off an emotional band-aid and hope the other party doesn't bleed to death. Taj isn't the only one set to discover reality bites this summer. Brandon's real father is floundering around like a sucker-mouthed catfish. Blue says he's gunning to go on Celebrity Cougars so he can publicly disgrace Brandon in exchange for 15 minutes of fame. I care deeply about this because I've become an aunt to Brandon and Lexi through marriage. These are my people. If you want to mess with them, You'll have to go through me first. Scotty has been phoning constantly, asking for advice on how to shovel out of this shit show. At this point, his situation is screwed up beyond repair. Scotty is practically drowning in debt and not making any headway in cleaning up the mess with Brandon's biological father. They say honesty is the best policy, but Scotty doesn't seem interested in coming clean with his family about this impending doom. Too bad Scotty doesn't understand the cover-up is much worse than the crime. Just ask Martha Stewart, the happy homemaker who went to prison for lying to the feds. At a loss for any better ideas, I recommended Scotty employ the nuclear option. Right after I hung up, I wondered if that was a good idea. Any plan involving Nancy Neptune usually isn't. Skitters the cat hates Blue McKenna more than digesting hairballs. That's why he's especially irked to find that even in death, Blue won't give him a break. Adding insult to injury, Skitters is the only one who can help Blue find her way out of a hellish nightmare involving the DMV. Skitters can't get in a decent nap until he helps Blue cross over. And that's the rub. Get all the scratchy details in Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted by Adele Park.
In case you haven't noticed, you've been ghosted.
Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted. Get ghosted today on Audible, Downpour, and Spotify. Meow, kitties.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.